This is Lawrence Spivak, inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, now celebrating its 23rd year on television and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Meet the Press is brought to you by the Standard Oil Company, New Jersey. Off the coast of Louisiana, where people's livelihoods depend on shrimp. More than 20 years ago, shrimpers thought they were seeing the end of an era and a way of life. They were concerned because oil drilling had just begun offshore. Shrimp are one of the most delicate marine creatures. And despite our assurances that the shrimp industry and oil industry could live together in harmony, few fishermen believed it. Now, the wells are here by the thousands, and the shrimp are still here by the millions. Jersey's affiliate, Humble Oil, doesn't claim credit for the good shrimping, but we don't seem to have done it any harm.
Our guests today on Meet the Press are three members of the President's Commission on Campus Unrest, whose report was released this weekend. They are William W. Scranton, Chairman, former Governor of Pennsylvania, James Ahern, Chief of Police of New Haven, Connecticut, and Joseph Rhodes, Jr., a junior fellow at Harvard University. I'd like to start by asking Governor Scranton this. Governor, in the conclusion of the Commission's report, you state, and I quote, "The most important of all the Commission's recommendations rests with the President. As the leader of all Americans, only the President can offer the compassionate, reconciling moral leadership that can bring the country together again. In your judgment, at this point, what is the most important thing the President can do?"
I think the most important thing the President could do right now would be to try to explain to the American people, with the prestige of his office and the moral leadership that the President of the United States can always give if he so desires, the need for a reconciliation of views so that black is at not complete odds with white and vice versa, and so that young is not at complete odds with old and vice versa, which we have seen is deep and compelling. And the urgency for this is of the utmost.
Governor, do you really think that another speech by the President after those he has made is going to reconcile the American people?
No, but I think it will help a great deal. I don't think you can do this. It is so deep in 1 minute or in one speech, but I think you have to begin that way and really mean it.
Chief Ahern, do you believe that deadly force by police should under any circumstances be used in the case of student riots or violence?
I wouldn't completely rule out the use of deadly force against students. There may very well come points in time that deadly force may have to be applied. I think the Commission has taken the stand that minimum amounts of force, minimum amounts of show of provocative weapons should be used, and that certainly all the rules of good judgment, all the rules of professional police should apply in the use of deadly force.
Can you give us any example where
use
it?
In deadly force?
Yes.
I think in a sniper situation, it would be clear that you would have to use it.
Mr. Rhodes, based on what you have learned on the commission, what advice would you give a student who is unhappy with our society and wants to change things without resorting to violence?
Well, it's very hard. The advice has to be given in the context of the kind of situation that's being created for students. For example, if those running for political office in the fall open themselves up to the help of students, their support and contribution to their campaigns, then that becomes an avenue for students to act through, namely the political system. But if the public, because of their deep resentment of students, does not accept students into that political process, then we cut the students' activities down to a bare minimum.
Would you advise him to work within the society in all cases?
We have no choice but to work within our society. Discussions about working beyond the system, I think, try to deny the reality of our country. What students are doing is trying to realize their heritage to provide leadership in these troubled times. That leadership cannot be provided external to the country.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be back to introduce our panel and continue the questioning in just a minute. But first, this message.
Karen Maas was born in Holland the year they started exploring for oil near her hometown. By the time she was in high school, they still hadn't found any. Then in 1959, Jersey's Dutch affiliate and its partners hit it. Not oil, but gas. The biggest natural gas field and the largest single source of energy ever discovered in Europe. Karen probably couldn't care less about what she cooks with or heats her house with, so long as it does it well. But she might be surprised to learn that her neighborhood Groningen gas plant also runs a steel mill in Belgium, a brewery in Germany, heats sidewalk cafes in France, and pays 30% of Holland's taxes. It's been good for us, good for Karen's hometown, and good for Europe.
Now back to Meet the Press, an unrehearsed press conference. Here's our moderator, Lawrence Spivak.
We're ready now to resume our interview with three members of the President's Commission on Campus Unrest, Chairman William Scranton, Police Chief James Ahern, and student Joseph Rhodes. Questioning our guests today are Sander Van Oker of NBC News, James J. Kilpatrick of the Washington Star Syndicate, Jack Rosenthal of the New York Times, and Eric Wentworth of the Washington Post. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Van Oker.
Governor Scranton, throughout the report, you've emphasized the role of moral leadership on the part of the president, but consider these facts. Among his advisors are Professor Moynihan from Harvard, who advised him on what happened at Harvard in 69, was harshly critical of the students, Professor Kissinger, who has been harshly critical of Yale President Kingman Brewster, the Attorney General, who's harsh on students, and the vice presidents, whose views are very well known, and the president himself at one time referred to certain students as bums. Now, given those facts, how can you possibly expect this report to have any effect on the administration?
Well, I think that the episodes of this spring had a very deep effect on the administration from what I can see from the outside. I think the Cambodian decision, followed by the horror and tragedy on Jackson State campus and Kent State campus, made him do at least this amount, which was to form this commission. You remember that he went to the American Bar Association and asked for their judgments and got a report from them, and one of the recommendations was the forming of a commission. Now he has gotten our report. Yesterday I had a very fine visit with him in the White House. He promised me that he would read the entire report, and he said that he wanted to talk to me when he came back from the trip that he's on. I think that there is quite a change already this summer in the wording and the rhetoric that has come out of some of the high officials in government. I've talked with Mr. Finch and Mr. Moynihan, to whom you refer, and both of them have read the report and have given me reason to believe that they think there's a great deal of merit in it.
Do you think the first step he might usefully take to fulfill the recommendations is to silence the vice president's attacks on students?
Well, first of all, you'll remember that this summer the vice president has not made the kind of comment that he was making before about students. He is now on the campaign trail, as we all know. I don't think the president is going to tell the vice president to be quiet. I think he's going to use him, as he already is, in the campaign. But you notice that the inferences and the arrangements and the comments that the vice president has made are somewhat different in their rhetoric than they used to be on the recent television show. He had an encounter with students. I thought that was very courageous of him, frankly, and very helpful. And I think more of that kind of communication would be very useful.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Mr. Ahern, what do you see as the role of police in these serious campus disorders? When should they be called in?
I think that's a problem that depends on the circumstances. It depends on the kind of plans that have been laid between law enforcement officers and university administrators.
Well, you don't call them in when there's nothing but peaceful picketing.
Absolutely not. And I think in terms of peaceful dissent, the role of the police officer is one of a referee, one of a fair, impartial observer on the scene. There as much to protect the right to dissent as he is to prevent trouble from occurring and to take action when it does occur.
Pardon? Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
The point when he comes in is a critical one. If he comes in early, he may be provocative. If he comes in too late, it may the situation may have escalated. That judgment has to be made by both the university administrator and the law enforcement administrator, who have to be well informed. And unfortunately, in some incidents that have happened in this country, that has not been the case.
Mr. Rosenthal.
Mr. Rhodes, the commissioners were evidently deeply moved by their experience in on-the-spot investigations in Jackson and in Kent. What did you find out?
We found a number of things. First thing we found out was that these campus unrest abstractions result in people being dead, and that's a reality. But one of the hard things we have to get across in the country is that people are really being killed. When you talk about punishing criminal students, you're sometimes talking about killing somebody's children. And we have to remind the American people that that's the consequences and the cost of bringing down repression on the student movement. We found people in law enforcement in Jackson who demonstrated a remarkable, incredible lack of concern for the human life of black people, who regarded the black people of Mississippi as fair game for their missiles, for their weapons, and acted in seemingly totally unprofessional ways, given the circumstances, who were taunted more than anything else by the students, and shot over 300 times into a girl's dormitory at unarmed people, killing two, wounding nine, for no obvious reason. At Kent State, we found contradicting testimony. But the thing that I think was clear was that we found students who felt that their turf, their campus, had been invaded by the National Guard. The National Guard was an extension of the American military, which is carrying on its operation in Cambodia, and didn't quite understand that the governor was meaning them when he said we had to root out this new terrible disease in our society, these students. He's still talking about people's children who are now dead.
In either case, did you find that law enforcement was justified in what it did, in any way justified?
We found that in both cases, the use of the deadly force that was used was completely unjustified.
Mr. Wentworth.
Governor Scranton, much has been written in your report and elsewhere about the university's very survival being threatened. What happens if a university loses this fight for survival? The buildings, the faculty, the students might still be there, but what would be missing? What would a dead university look like?
It depends upon how it is dead. If it is dead from over-politicization, it is dead mentally and as a use in progress in intellectual thought and in scholarship and in learning, teaching. If it's dead because of disruption and violence, it seems to me that then it is not only literally impossible to get a learning, but it is literally dead by building and by burning, by what has happened to the buildings and by burning. I can say to you that one of the things that bothered this commission very much indeed was the fact that on the campuses generally, doesn't mean every campus in America, but we were appalled by the fact that there was comparatively little communication and planning and arrangement in the event that any disturbance broke out. And certainly this was true in the instances which we looked into particularly deeply. Of course, they were the extreme ones because we were asked to. But nevertheless, this is also true on other campuses, although I think they're beginning to learn their lesson.
How important is money to these universities?
Well, money right now is of vital importance to all of them. State legislatures have cut down. The Congress has not come up with a higher education bill that the president has advocated. The personal giving to private institutions is down, as you know.
In connection with with reactions to the students' behavior. Is that clear?
I think this has had a great deal to do with it. The legislators and the congressmen have said so, and certainly some of the alumni giving has been hit too, although not as badly. And private institutions are having deficits and that kind of thing, which some of them were not having before.
Mr. Van Oker.
Chief Ahern, as a police official with plenty to do outside of the campus of Yale University, do you sometimes worry about police officials like yourself being asked to go in to take care of demonstrations which are arising from either the government or society's failure to deal with problems which give rise to these demonstrations?
No question about it. I think policemen and police departments in general are truly the men in the middle in today's society. I think that there's some fundamental problems in our society and in this country, and police have been put in the role of being the cutting edge of government, and that's having to handle those kind of problems in a sensitive way without radicalizing even more of the student population. Now, that takes a considerable amount of training, and it takes a considerable amount of planning, much of which has never been given to police departments in this country. And in fact, when it does start on campus, it's too late to start thinking about it. Police departments have to become professional. They have to be supported by state and local government to a much greater degree than they have been in the past.
Will your task be made easier, or will it be made more difficult if FBI agents come on the Yale campus, as has been proposed by the administration?
In terms, you're speaking of the 1,000
Yes.
FBI agents that have been requested by President Nixon. That seems to me that they will relieve a local police department of some jurisdictional problems. I have no problem at all with letting somebody else do the investigations of arson, bombings, or terrorist activity on campus. I think it may raise some questions if they're that serious a problem on campus, why that kind of concern hasn't been exhibited for the kind of arson, terrorist activities, and bombings that do occur in the city. It also, I think, remains to be defined what terrorist activities are. What's arson? Is that dropping a match in a waste paper basket, for instance? And it may raise some serious questions about how far the Federals can go in terms of entry onto campus.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Mr. Rhodes, at least 15 or 20 points in the report, the commission specifically condemns violence. You join in those recommendations or condemnations of violence?
Yes, sir.
You condemn, then, the violence at Kent State, the burning of the ROTC building that preceded the incident last May?
Yes, sir, I think.
Have you condemned that, do you believe, as seriously, as publicly, as you've condemned the killing of the students?
I've tried my best to make that point. I don't condone the violence at Kent State, against the building or against the students.
But it was that violence on the part of the students that led to the shootings, was it not?
That is not at all clear.
Mr. Rosenthal.
Governor, your commission has now appealed to the president pointedly in language from his own inaugural address to bring us together. But White House advisors say things aren't that bad this fall, and they imply the commissioners should pursue another piece of advice from that address. Lower your voices. If that's all the attention the White House is willing to pay to a report that's as urgent and as demonstrably somber and serious as yours, what's your outlook for campus unrest in the future?
Well, if that's the attitude, of course, we won't know what the attitude is until the president has read the report and has conversed with me about it. But I think, I am sure, that all nine of the commissioners and all of the staff feel very strongly that there is a great urgency here. It is more profound and it is more enduring in our judgment than just what may or may not be happening on the campuses this fall. We believe strongly that there is a culture emerging among young people in this country, which they believe is a return to what America is supposed to have stood for in the Declaration of Independence, and they feel this very strongly. And it's deeper in our judgment than any of the major issues which exacerbate it. The war, the social justice problem, and all of this kind of thing are very basic to exacerbation. But the feelings that they have about our present society are deeper than just the issues that are presently giving greater impetus to outbreaks.
Why does it make a difference whether the president speaks out? Does he have any credibility left with students?
Yes, I believe he does. and I think this was proven at Kansas State. He spoke out, as you know, very strongly against violence there, much along the lines of what we say in our report. And it was accepted extremely well, and I was very happy he did that. And I may add, I thought it was a very courageous venture, because everybody has always said that the President of the United States could not go on a major campus in the United States.
Mr. Wentworth.
Chief Ahern, what is your view on whether the Nixon administration and President Nixon in particular can fulfill this reconciling role that the commission considers so important?
That's highly speculative, and I'm not so sure that I really want to pursue that. I have personally a great deal of confidence that he will act. In our meeting with him yesterday, he was very warm, very cordial, and spoke good words about the problem. I think he has a great understanding of it, much more than he may have in May. I don't think anybody on the commission would put the amount of work and the amount of time in without some confidence that it would have some impact on both the administration and other persons involved in the problem.
And do you see good possibilities that officials at the local level, governors, state lawmakers, mayors, police chiefs in various cities can also recognize this responsibility to reconcile and do their part?
I think that's in some ways more important than the federal administration recognizing the problem. I think a good deal of the rhetoric that has escalated the pitch of dissent, the inclination towards violence in this country, has been generated, in fact, by lower people in the bureaucracy of the federal government, by state and local officials. And in terms of law enforcement, the kind of signals that are given to policemen and to police departments in general really have more impact when they come from local officials, particularly
Gentlemen,
mayors.
We have less than 4 minutes. Mr. Vanocur.
Mr. Rhodes, have black students been able to reconcile the outrage that followed on the part of white America, most of white America, to the 4 students being killed at Kent State when the 3 black students killed at Orangeburg, South Carolina, went virtually unnoticed?
I think black students in this country do not live under a great many illusions about our nation. One of the big problems, you know, in our nation is there is a great cultural gap, dislocation in our nation. And it's between black and white and old and young. One of the essences of that gap is a gap in perception. Black people perceive the reality of America is that it's racist and that it oppresses black people and represses their leadership and kills its young men whenever it can. At Jackson State, it's South Carolina. I don't think many black students were surprised that that repression had spread now to those white students who had attempted to affect an equal change in our national policy toward Vietnam.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Governor Scranton, in the preface to your commission's report, you express a fear that unpopular initiatives in foreign policy could trigger further violent protest. Is this a suggestion on the part of the commission that these students should be appeased in some way by according to their views of major foreign policy?
No. It's just a point that we would like to make that any major event taking place, such as the Cambodian decision, would clearly create the same kind of storm that occurred after that one, and we thought we ought to say it. I remind you that there are a lot more, it seems to us, trigger-prone people in America today, and this is one of the great problems we have. This polarization is becoming so strong that there are people on both sides who seem to want to arm themselves. This is a very unfortunate atmosphere to be living in, and one which creates all the more necessity for considered judgment of any action.
Mr. Rosenthal.
Chief Ahern, speaking as a law enforcement professional, would you agree with Mr. Rhodes' judgment that the use of deadly force was completely unjustified in both Kent and Jackson?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Wentworth?
Mr. Rhodes, if rhetoric is toned down and if violence can be curbed, what can we expect from this youth culture?
Well, I can think one of the things you can expect is that they have been bred. You see, one of the big problems is that students have been bred and prepared to take chances. for life's sake, to make our country come into a new reality. They could be given an opportunity, for example, to have some role in the Middle East, to make some contribution, make some sacrifice there. If they're willing to give their lives for this thing, I think, this new potential in our country. They never dreamed they'd die in Kent, Ohio.
Governor Scranton, if the president fails to act upon the recommendations of this commission, how are you going to view it?
Bitterly disappointed. We need it desperately in this country, in our judgment. And I think after what happened this spring, everybody in America recognized.
Would you consider that a failure of leadership, Chief Ahern?
Yes, I probably would.
Mr. Rhodes?
He would, in effect, consign many young Americans to a violent death.
I'm sorry to interrupt on that note, but our time is up. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guest in just a minute after this message.
Lower auto insurance rates, an offer from Allstate. First step in lowering insurance rates is to figure out what makes them high. The fact is, more than 3 out of every 4 auto damage claims are for low-speed crashes, 5 or 10 miles an hour. Here's a car moving only 5 miles an hour, walking speed. Look again, slow motion. Average damage repair cost, more than $200, at only 5 miles an hour. Clearly, what's needed is less delicate car design. That's why Allstate is ready to offer a 20% discount on collision insurance for any automobile that the manufacturer certifies through independent tests can survive even a 5-mile-an-hour front and rear test barrier crash without damage. We hope this 20% Allstate discount will encourage sturdier designs and lower insurance rates for you.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin in a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013. That's Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next week on Meet the Press, our guests will be the 2 senatorial candidates in Massachusetts, Senator Edward M. Kennedy, Democrat, and Josiah A. Spaulding, Republican. Now, this is Lawrence Spivak saying goodbye for William Scranton, James Ahern, Joseph Rhodes, and Meet the Press.
Today's edition of Meet the Press has been brought to you by the Standard Oil Company, New Jersey.
How good are you at spotting clues and hidden songs? Here's your chance to test yourself and enjoy sparkling game show fun in the bargain. Join Wink Martindale for Words and Music, the show that mixes laughter with prizes and words with music every weekday afternoon right here.